You are listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. Past episodes are available at creamcitymedia.com/anti. Hello, I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome again to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we're against so much, what do we stand for? Well, the ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society might look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. As ever, WXRW River West Radio needs your help. Times are tough for nonprofits, and especially so for nonprofits who seek to engage, educate, and activate the at-risk and the disenfranchised. If you want to help us out, you can donate today online. You can join our Patreon campaign. You can come down to the station at 824 East Center Street and purchase some gear. Or if you represent a local entity of some kind, reach out and become an official underwriter. You can support us, and in so doing, we will make sure that everybody knows about you. I was born in the year 1980, which is useful because if I had to do difficult math, I would never know how old I am. Why am I bringing that up? Well, I've been thinking about character arcs and story arcs lately. I'm lucky to work from home, and so I often put documentaries and podcasts on while I work, and lately I've been listening to a lot of film theory podcasts. A crucial part of any narrative is the overall arc of a character. What is the overarching story that defines that character's transformation? The change that they undergo, even if that arc is simply that the character doesn't change. What would my arc be? Well, thankfully, I'm not dead yet, so the arc would need to encapsulate some growth I've undergone within the span of time from my birth to now, since that's the timeline that we're concerned with for my story. It would probably be some BS tripe about coming of age or coming to terms with what I do for work or something pointless. This past weekend, my wife and I watched the 1972 stage production of Pippin, directed by Bob Fosse. Beyond having kind of a lousy, stupid character arc for the title character, it got me thinking about a larger, more realistic story arc. For those who don't know, the musical is about the eldest son of Charlemagne, or Charles the Great, sometimes referred to as the father of Europe. Charlemagne was crowned the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire in the year 800. And again, I'm not great at math, so my calculator tells me that that's 1,219 years ago. Think of everything those humans couldn't even conceive of at the time. The miracles of medicine, which are truly miraculous. The modern technologies which move and shape the world, etc. However, there is plenty to this modern society that would be all too familiar to those humans of 1,200 years ago. A brutal war, famine, crushing poverty, genocide, intolerance, ignorance, starvation, pestilence, and above all, ruthless and unending control by a powerful elite minority. It struck me sitting in the dark that night that there are two potential story arcs for the human race, two potential character arcs for us as a species, and that's what I want to talk about this week. To talk about the human race, you have to go back. But you don't have to go back too far, really. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Single-celled organisms appeared on the scene around 3.5 billion years ago, so well, it only took them a billion years to develop or so, you know, which is in and of itself an unthinkable amount of time. 600 million years ago, the first multicellular critters evolved. often you'll see the lifespan of the Earth depicted as a clock. So if it were a clock, and if that, you know, if the life cycle of the Earth started at 12 a.m., then multicellular life appeared on the scene at around 1 minute after 8 o'clock. 200 million years ago, the first mammals evolved. But to make things simple for our purposes, we need to go to the very, very, very recent past. Humans, as a species, achieved what is called behavioral modernity only a mere 50,000 years ago. And as for actual human civilization, that's so young as to basically be almost fetal. About 12,000 years ago, the very first organized human societies began to form in a way that would be recognizable to us today as true organization beyond just small family groups. Our familial origin is on the plains of Africa, and as we've all been told, civilization began in the Fertile Crescent. But it really started earlier than that. Somewhere around that time, 12,000 years ago or so, we began worshiping what might be considered, you know, in our modern concept, deities. We'll never know what those early religions looked like. We'll never know exactly what their function was. And I bring up religion specifically because it might be the very first example of humanity subjecting itself to an arbitrary power system. But recent evidence is creating a strong anthropological case for early religions not actually being the kind we see in the later religions. Like that top-down, you know, early religions probably were not based on structures of power, with humans worshiping all-powerful gods. The evidence is actually overwhelming that for 90% of our structured societies, they were completely and totally non-hierarchical, even when they were proto-religious. In fact, for thousands of years, far longer than recorded history, groups of humans in moderately sized groups achieved their common goals through consensus decision-making. Sociological and anthropological work done by the UK's Evolution Institute discovered that our ancestors used a process of common discussion, listening to everybody's concerns and not allowing anyone to dominate the decision-making process. If we found it impossible to achieve a consensus, we disbanded and reformed in a different configuration, or we shed uncooperative individuals. We achieved larger spans of communication and organization in a fascinating way. And I'll quote from the study. The only way that large human groups can arrive at a common course of action is by structuring interpersonal connections. Imagine a large human group as a network in which any particular node, a person, has a thick connection to just a few other people, between 4 and 10 of such connections. This is a small enough number so that each person in a pair can know the other quite well, and they can rapidly coordinate their objectives and actions. So the coordinator at the center of the network speaks to and gets feedback from 10 other people. Those 10 speak to 10 more people each, and so on. It is possible to connect a group of any size using this scheme by adding extra levels of communication and decision making. For example, a society with 1 million members would need 6 levels. We need only 10 levels to connect everybody on Earth. End quote. So that's what is called a neutral hierarchy. It's not top-down, it's distributive and horizontal. It is used to spread information and to gather discussions towards finding common cause, even at very, very large scales, literally the scale of the entire world. So historically, sadly, it wouldn't last. For whatever reason, as of yet unknown, this hierarchical structure began placing decision-making power in the hands of central figures, who would then evolve into despots of various stripes. first chiefs, then kings, then emperors, then presidents, and CEOs, and so on and so forth. This is the first character arc I see for humanity, the primary conflict of which is us versus the societal trend towards tyranny. What could our arc be? We began as horizontal mutualist groups of equals, all working for the betterment of all. We fell into the trap of oligarchy, suffering under torturous inequality and despotism. The final resolution of this story could be that of emancipation, or humanity's combined struggle to liberate ourselves from the yoke of oppression and recreate the world as a fair, free, and equal place. And I actually outlined, kind of as a thought experiment, one of the ways that we could achieve this larger character arc for the human family. That's in episode 41, titled The Future, Part 2. It's available at creamcitymedia.com/anti in the archives of all the past episodes. And that is, of course, the character arc that I would like to see, our combined victory over the ligatures of power. No more masters. But sadly, I've been kind of in a low spot in the area of positivity for the last few days, so that's not the arc that I see us actually fulfilling. At the beginning of this episode, I said I was going to outline two potential character arcs for our species. This is the second, and what I see as the more likely of the two arcs. To reiterate, the Earth is around 4.5 billion years old. It took billions of years to evolve multicellular life from the primordial ooze of the ancient oceans. On the big scale geologic clock of the Earth's entire lifespan, the hominids, us, have been around for maybe 1 second. We've been crawling and swinging and walking on the face of the planet for around 2 million years, generously. We've had actual civilization for around 12,000 years, less than a nanosecond of the Earth's geologic clock. Within that incredibly brief span of time, we have destroyed huge swaths of the life on this planet. Over 300 species of animals have been hunted to extinction for meat, fur, trophies, and trade directly by humans. Now fully 1/4 of all species on Earth are considered endangered because of our activities and our continued sprawl. The creatures we have wiped from the face of the Earth represent themselves billions of years of evolution, all cut short by our direct actions. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. As we all know, human-caused or anthropogenic climate change is the looming death of all life on Earth, which is the character arc we seem destined or hell-bent to fulfill. And it's a sad and ironic story, really. All scientific evidence currently shows that Earth is the only planet in all of creation to have evolved life. And we could be wrong, but at least within the perceivable, observable universe, we're it. We're the only planet that has evolved life. So evolution as a trend creates smarter and smarter creatures with greater and greater capacity to learn and regenerate, and eventually evolves us, the only animal capable of reshaping its environment to suit its own purposes. Our character arc is one of violent disrespect to the very Earth that bore us. And the final conclusion will be the inevitable death of all life on the planet, and perhaps all life, therefore, in the known universe. If we don't stop using fossil fuels, essentially now, then we will push the climate to a degree where all the Earth's natural feedback cycles of cooling will fail, and there will be no turning back from what is called the hothouse Earth. So right now we're pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and there are a few cyclical structures in place that sequester that carbon, the oceans and forests being the largest of those systems. If we continue in this current vein, there will be a tipping point. We don't know what that tipping point is, terrifyingly, but there will be a tipping point where those systems, the forests and the ocean, will no longer sequester carbon. They will release it. They will release the millions and millions of tons of carbon that they have been soaking up. And that is where the cycle will become self-sustaining in the reverse. The gears will be shifted, as it were. That creation of what is called the hothouse Earth will trigger a self-sustaining cycle of global warming that will turn the rainforests into deserts, the oceans into acid, and will eventually kill all life on the planet, all the way down to the single-celled organisms that it took a billion years to evolve. That will be the final curtain call for all life, and it will have been our fault. And that's our character arc. The only species guilty of killing the beautiful planet that gave it life. I'm not a father, and I won't ever be one. And I don't care to be. I am an uncle, however, of some really incredible kids. Some teenagers and some younger kids. And I'm kind of, you know, an uncle once removed, because many of my friends have wonderful babies and kids of their own. In fact, two of them just welcomed their first daughter to the world only a few days ago. And I'm on the internet and I'm looking at these really beautiful baby pictures, and I just nearly cry because I'm so sad. And it should be an occasion for joy, but for me, it's just not. Those kids, these babies, have no future. Just none at all. Their lives will be violently tumultuous. They have the worst disasters ever witnessed by humanity to look forward to in their future. Just a few of which: global wars born of privation, famine, drought, and desertification will create a population of climate refugees numbering in the hundreds of millions, if not actual billions. So that means the few countries remaining with fresh drinkable water will be inundated, and their resources will be stretched to the absolute limits. Our crops here in the Midwest, just recently, they're already incredibly threatened due to flooding, which is only going to get worse. Coastal cities and islands will completely vanish under rising oceans. Most of the animals will only be memories stored in videos from nature documentaries. Maybe some, you know, will remain alive in zoos, kept there for our grandchildren to see the few remaining examples of some of the animals that we drove to extinction before zoos themselves become unsustainable and we can no longer afford to waste water and food on, you know, what really should be museum pieces, living museum pieces. I got some questions for you if you're still listening, and I wouldn't blame you if you stopped listening by now. What does it feel like to be part of the generation that still had a few years' time to do the right thing and to have done nothing? Does it make you angry to know you could have done something and didn't? Or does it just make you sad? Don't get me wrong, we can still stop it if we wanted to, but we won't. Last Sunday, my wife lamented as we turned off the television. She said, "I don't want to go to work." I said, "All right, so don't." Well, she said, "Well, if I don't, then I'll get fired and then we won't be able to make rent." And I said, "All right, so we just won't pay the rent." And she said, "Well, if we don't pay the rent, then we'll get evicted." I said, "Well, we just won't let them evict us." And then she said something like, "They'll make us." And that really hinted at the unspoken truth and the whole reason that we won't, as a race, do anything to stop the inevitable death of the whole planet and everything on it, because we are afraid. Because we know that the powers that be have one tool at their disposal to keep us in line, and it is violence. Oh yeah, we could stop the system if we really wanted to. But we all know that the second we all decide to stop going to work, the second that we all partake in a general strike, that the traitorous police will be there to crack skulls, break fingers, and worse. It happened at Occupy. The police broke wrists, fingers, cracked skulls, and worse. That's the reality. The structures of power will threaten us with violence, keeping us working, keeping us driving, keeping us consuming, keeping us grinding away until all the world is a smoldering chunk of burnt charcoal, lifeless and spinning around a nuclear sun. And all that will survive us is our screaming radio signals, a laugh track for our miserable, self-inflicted demise. Thank you for tuning into this, the 50th episode of The Anti, here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been your host, NTSC, and I'll probably be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our shared potential, whatever that potential may be. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found at riverwestradio.com. So you don't ever agitate without educating. What does it feel like to look at your daughter, son, niece, nephew, cousin? Who's the youngest person you know? How does it feel to look at them and realize they have no future? How does it feel to look at the youngest person you know, the very youngest person you know, and realize that the world they are inheriting is death, destruction, privation, and violence on an incredible scale, absolutely unwitnessed by any past generation? The wars that are coming will make World War II look like a day in the park. We can stop it, though. If we really wanted to, we have all the power. Yes, the state has the police and the military, and that is violence. Their tools are all violence. That's it. That's all they have. We don't have that luxury. Our tool is our work and our numbers. We outnumber the controlling class by roughly 2 million to 1. If we decided to just stop participating in this system, if we decided to stop fighting their wars, to stop working at their factories and their mills, to stop cutting their trees, to stop making their products, to stop clocking in, to stop earning them vast wealth. If we just decided to stop, we could save everyone and everything. And you could look into the eyes of that smallest, youngest person you know, and you could tell them, I saved the world. I saved it for you. We came damn close to killing it, but we decided to be brave instead. And we decided to join up, link hands, lift each other up out of the oil age, and into an era of sustainable, regenerative peace. We can still do it. There's still a little bit of time. We've got to get our acts together and quick. I've already joined the fight, and I welcome all of you to come along with me. We'll let the music run out for the last few minutes. Talk to you next week.